let's get started. The homework 3 has been returned. The averages, I think the TA already sent a mail with the averages. It seems very high. Pretty much everybody seems to have gotten close to 50 out of 50. So I think the TA is trying to just make me look like a really bad guy by giving good marks himself. But that may be good. Maybe the homework is good. Maybe so there's only one other homework for which I think the question 1 has already been put up. Okay. So in terms of the rest of the semester, it just in fact the semester is almost over apparently. So this is April 19th. I would be doing the second part of information extraction today, and depending on the time I might be able to start information integration, and next week is mostly information integration, and then essentially that's the end of the main classes. I am trying to decide whether May 1st would just be a complete interactive review discussion sort of a class, or whether we're going to do any new topics. Okay, that's basically where it's going to be. Questions?
I have a doubt regarding the project. When I just went now, it says the demo starts with beta text and this goes on this first. So, is it that we get slots or we all.
Yeah, I think the TA is going to send you a mail with the. With that sort of with that information. In fact, I think he just sent me a mail asking me some question. I did not get a chance to answer him.
Does that mean that everyone submits it on 26 and then demos it or something like that?
I think you can. I mean, I don't know. Did he say anything in the write up? I think the final project is due by the end of the class. But demos, we originally thought we will do it before the week preceding. So. If there's a, most of you are okay with that, that's fine. If there's a major issue and that you want to do demos a little later, then you need to tell. I think the TA is sending mails saying, is everything okay? And nobody says anything. I mean, I don't know whether you're telling him or not, but I'm assuming that if nobody says anything is problematic, then that you're ready to do demos and then submit the full project by May 1st. What?
The analysis report. Do we have to submit the report also during the demo?
No, the entire thing is due on the May 1st. So that time you have to submit the whole thing. But obviously you need to have everything working before the demo. Okay. Other questions? I don't know. Does anybody remember when is the final exam? No? And maybe you don't have a final exam. I suddenly realized that the semester is getting over, so I guess we need to figure this out. I think there is an actual date for the final exam for the in-class. I'm sure we can check that up. The real question is whether I'm going to do it in-class or whether I'm going to take home. Let's discuss this next week. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So are there any, if there are no other questions regarding the administrative stuff, are there any questions regarding the content of either in the information extraction that we discussed last class? Yeah.
I have a question about the homework for the first question. Does it say that are there any formal like grammar description of X query?
Oh yeah. Just say you can go to W3C.
W3C or just provide us some examples.
I know. See, I mean, they also have the full reference manual on the W3C. It's just a question of how much you really want to look at it. Okay? Don't print it. You know, that's how I can say. You'd be killing like one or two trees right there. It's a really large standard. Okay. Yeah, but that was, I think my experience has been that to do that homework, you barely need more than the use case level understanding of XQuery. Okay, but if you want to know more, I mean, if you go to the W3C, you have all the grammar for, you know, XQuery. Yes. What?
For the references given, see the use case sequence in the left space.
Yeah. So in the homework I said that. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So if you go to the what is that? The X archive or whatever. The little. Let's see. The not left pane. I think it's not left pane. It's the drop down pane now. So if you go to the interface that I was showing you, the little XQuery processor, on the top, you can actually, there's a drop-down menu, okay, and then they have essentially use cases of all the, so the use cases of XQuery are divided into a variety of categories. One category is SEQ category, which are essentially queries about sequences, okay, so that's what I was suggesting, okay. Other questions, comments? Okay, so I had to find out, to my chagrin, the time difference between Arizona and Samoa. Samoa, we had a deadline for papers by midnight Samoan time, and it turns out it's 4 a.m. Our time. So I was awake until 4 a.m. and I did get some sleep, but if I'm sort of nodding off, you know, one of you just take over the lecture and continue, okay? Okay. So information extraction, why did we come to here? We don't want this. So the last class I talked about the general background on why you would be interested in information extraction and two important types of information extraction scenarios. One where you expect that the original, that the text has been produced, you know, by converting some structured data into text, okay? In which case you expect that it would be quite easy to extract template-driven extraction, quite easy to do template-driven extraction, where the templates are written normally in terms of the DOM trees, you know, of the HTML, for example. Okay, now if the humans write it, that's one thing. It's also possible to learn them. I'm not going into the details, but it's also possible to use learning techniques, which basically wherein you show how to extract for a bunch of cases, and then it tries to pick the regular expression itself. So if you, those of you who know macro description, keyboard macros, etc., sometimes keyboard macros can be defined yourself, or it can be defined by an example. You know, you should, I want to do this, 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 and this, and then, you know, it can just be remembered as a template, okay? So that's one way of information extraction, and there's actually a whole bunch of research around just that aspect of it, in particular, how to allow humans to provide these regular expressions, okay? If to make their life simple, maybe sometimes allow them to, most of the tools that allow this sort of extraction from structured data allow the users to sort of highlight a particular region of the text, okay, and then give a name to that, So then you will wind up, so basically then the underlying program says, realizes that, okay, this piece of the text is supposed to be put in this slot. Remember that extraction is best understood as slot filling. You know, you have a predefined template which has slots, and you're trying to look at this text to figure out which piece of the text goes to which slot. Okay, so you can write these, underneath it all, these extractors ultimately are regular expressions over DOM trees. Okay, but the DOM tree being the XML, the rooted XML tree. Okay, and of course, for the web pages, HTML is what you have, which is actually XML. It's just a very specific form of XML. Now, and then there is work that's been done, lots of work that's been done to support, provide tools to write these in a semi-automated fashion. As I said, you can select pieces of regions and say this corresponds to this slot. Okay, and you can also throw in, so sometimes it might be the case that there are, the tricky thing of course is sometimes there may be the case, it might be the case that there is ambiguity in terms of how to extract. And in those cases, to support that, you would actually wind up doing extraction, the user winds up doing extraction manually from a couple of examples, multiple examples. And then there is a learner in the background which tries to generalize from these examples. Okay. Now, it's an interesting application of machine learning techniques, a different kind of machine learning than the naive-based sort of thing that we have talked about till now. But we don't really have time to go into the details of that type of learning. And then there is also this issue of, as I said, maintenance of such wrappers. Okay, those kinds of extractions are basically called so-called wrappers, because somebody is wrapping the data, structured data into text form, you're unwrapping it using these regular expressions. Now, if they change their wrapping a little bit, okay, then your unwrapper starts bringing junk. Okay, so for example, if I just put in, the capital of India is New Delhi, and then suddenly people decide who wants the, the is actually a useless word, we'll remove the article, and you just say capital of India is New Delhi, which for most people means the same, but for your wrapper it's completely, gobbledygook, because it's now when it's skipping, it actually is going to skip over India this time. Okay. Now, interestingly, actually, when this sort of a thing happens, and if somebody doesn't know, if nobody notices, then you're essentially picking up wrong parts of the text as data. Okay, so you're filling up these templates with wrong filler. Okay, there are also interesting techniques that have been developed, which can automatically monitor whether or not the wrappers are doing their job. Of course, you can always look every once in a while. You, the human employee, can look every once in a while to see if things are going fine. But you can also see if something has gone majorly wrong. Okay, and for that, essentially, the kind of ideas that they use, and there are like a bunch of slides on what I'm just talking about that I just hidden it. I hid it, so I'm not going into the details. But if you are interested, go back and look at those slides. But basically, what winds up happening in maintaining wrappers is, for example, for this slot, okay, what were the possible values that you had in the past? And what were their distribution? Okay, so if when the capital and country capital extraction was working well, then the country name would have been a set of real country names. Now, the program doesn't know that there is something called a real country name. I mean, as far as it's concerned, could be a country name. Okay, except it would realize that the country names are changing, at least. Whereas now, after this problem, country is always is. And capital, because you just skipped over, right? We have one extra the missing, and so you skipped over to, you skipped over India to is. Okay, so you're picking is all the time, and so you can say just from a statistical distribution of the, fields being extracted, that something went wrong. The distribution previously was very different from the distribution now. Okay, this kind of ideas have been, developed to at least provide some support, you know, which kind of gives an alarm to the human employee that, look, your wrapper isn't working. So then the employee comes and redoes the wrapper. Okay, so that's one way of doing information extraction. Now, the other thing is, of course, extraction from unstructured data. Now, when you start talking about extraction from unstructured text, so I mean unstructured text, not data, structured text versus unstructured text. Okay. When I say structured text, what I really mean is something which was, so there is like a reasonably stylized program which is converting data records into a stylized piece of English. Okay, so it's always, each of the records have the same exact English structure. Okay. Now, if you have unstructured English, then you have, and you're trying to extract from there, okay, then essentially you're coming close to natural language understanding. Okay. There is still, in the case of information extraction, as I mentioned last time, what the goal is not to understand the whole text, but try to pick, you know, some templates from it. Okay, some pieces of the information that's in the text. Okay. So there have been techniques developed that deal with unstructured text, okay, which are still not all the way to natural language processing, but they're still template driven. And so we're going to talk about a few of them in today's class. And again, you know, the discussion, unfortunately, much of this is still changing. Information extraction is a very, very active field. And so, in fact, extracting from structured text is sort of more or less closed. So there are tutorial papers you can read end to end, and that basically is more or less closed. But extracting from unstructured text, there is no clean distinction between where information extraction ends and natural language processing begins. The more you do, the more you become natural language processing. Okay. So all I can say is, where are we right now, and some interesting examples of this, and what you can do in the context of, let's say, the semantic web startup ideas that we've been discussing. So who would, you know, can we automatically, for example, annotate the web? Okay. So I would basically look at this information extraction from unstructured text from the point of view of automated support for semantic web. I just made up this way of looking at information extraction, okay? Because we talked about the fact that semantic web, in not necessarily just in terms of RDF and its schemas, but generally an idea of providing more structure to the web winds up requiring tag data and background knowledge, right? You know, you would have the tag data is the base facts, and background knowledge is in the RDFS schema. And we were talking about how if people wrote it, you know, you could potentially use it. Okay. Now the question is, can we just automatically take text and start adding, you know, tags ourselves automatically, okay, through some analysis? Because this analysis now winds up being information extraction. Okay. And so they have been approaches, there are at least interesting, I'll talk about two interesting approaches to automate both of these aspects. One is knowledge extraction, where essentially they extract certain very specific types of base facts of the type, you know, Seattle is a city, India is a country, capital of India is New Delhi, but from full text pages. So these are not pages that were converted from data records to text. This fact just occurred somewhere in the middle of some long page written in English. Okay. So you want to extract as many of these base facts as possible, and then when you extract those base facts, then you have essentially the ability of tagging. So for example, if you figured out through this kind of extraction that Seattle is a city, then wherever you see Seattle in pages, you can automatically add a tag saying it's a city, and in fact you can make a pointer to the Seattle city object in your hierarchy of you know, the taxonomy of things. Okay, and that would help in making more sense of this text file in terms of in many ways, in terms of query processing, in terms of understanding what's in the text page and so on. Okay, so now in this extraction, what we'll see actually is we'll look at an example, and what you wind up doing is, again, you're doing template-driven extraction. You're going to derive certain specific types of facts. And for each of these facts, the extraction mechanism would be, again, written in terms of the syntactic structure of the page, except now the page, you say, you agree that the HTML structure isn't going to be very useful, because much of the HTML structure would be, say, begin and the body is the entire page. So there is nothing much you can do. So you need to go one level deeper and actually analyze the syntax of English. You know, if you're into English, I mean, to the extent we're looking at English pages, you want to analyze the syntax of the English itself and then do part of speech tagging and grammar analysis, okay? And then you will have a syntactic tree of your current set of sentences. And then you can write your extraction patterns in terms of that syntactic tree instead of the HTML tree. Okay? HTML tree is already freely available if it is structured text, whereas the English syntax tree is not available directly. English is just written. And for that, you actually need to do syntax analysis. Okay, but now at this point, there are enough analyzers, public domain analyzers of syntax that are available that you can potentially apply them and get the syntax tree. Okay. Now, of course, this sort of extraction depends on the language. This works for English. You know, if you have a very different language, then you have to do the syntactic analysis for that language and then write templates in terms of the constituents of the syntax tree. So, for example, the rules for this for English might say, it might be written in terms of noun phrases, verb phrases, and things like that, which are well-defined grammatical structures in English syntax. Okay. The other approach that we will look at, so this is direct extraction of facts. Okay. The other approach, which is connecting pages to background knowledge. One type of idea that's been looked at is, if somebody goes and writes a large-scale background knowledge of the world, okay, and one way of writing this background knowledge might be just to give a taxonomy of all the concepts, okay, things are becoming living things, non-living things become, mammals and etc. And so you have this large-scale taxonomy of all the things in the world, and when there are specific words occurring in a page, if you can take a specific word in this page and connect it to its right place in the taxonomy of things, that's very useful. Okay, so because the taxonomy then becomes the background knowledge, and then you're just making a connection to that background knowledge by tagging it. Okay, that's another useful idea. And of course, this, again, there are approaches for doing it automatically. So here you're actually extracting specific facts. Here you are making tags. You're tagging the data on the page directly. Okay, so those are the two approaches that I look at. Question? Yes. Well, because so the idea is, it's in fact there currently exists. So there will never be foolproof, complete background knowledge ever. But what we will look at, in the SemTag Seeker, they use an ontology called CHAP ontology. Okay, which has 700,000 nodes. It's a tree. An ontology, you can think of it as a tree. It's like basically the superclass, its subclasses, then their subclasses and their subclasses and so on. Okay, so they have 700,000 concepts in this ontology. People can add more to it. Now there's only one ontology, okay, that somebody has written. Now to the extent there is a program which goes to everybody's page in the world and makes connections for words appearing in their pages to this central ontology. You can't ask people to listen to a central ontology, but if they can write whatever they want, but a program goes and makes a connection between what they wrote and a central ontology, that avoids the conformance issue. How do you make sure that people will conform to some specific way of writing things. Okay, so the answer is, and then now if the ontology, it may well be the case that the ontology, instead of being 700,000, is only 500,000, or it is 1,200,000. You know, the more background knowledge you have, the more of the things you can tag. The less you have, the less of the things you can tag. Okay, once again, if you are into understanding the entire meaning of the page, this won't work. But if all you are doing is like the YouTube sort of idea where people are just putting tags on in the object. Okay. Now, if those tags, imagine those tags correspond to tags in the TAP ontology. So it's like, imagine people are asked to put tags in YouTube, you know, but you don't make up your own words. You must use the word in the ontology that is appearing in, you know, this TAP ontology, which is like 700,000 words. Now, when you do that, you know, not all words in the ontology not all concepts are at the same level. It's not a flat hierarchy anymore. It's not a flat structure anymore. So you might say, this is a mammal, instead of saying it is a specific mammal. Okay? So by putting the tag, you are essentially saying, you know, it's this guy lives here in the hierarchy. Now, humans won't do it, because humans will say, you know, we just did it for fun. You know, we are not going to read somebody's large ontology and use exactly the tags from there in the correct way. But if I write a program, it's okay. So it's an interesting idea. Again, it's not clear to me that any of these things are going to just take over the web. But these are ways in which you can do partial information extraction. Okay, and they're all on the way towards, if you can do NLP search engines, natural language processing oriented search engines, fast, then all of whatever I have said is sort of trivial. You know, I don't need to have a separate course anymore. Okay, but to the extent we don't have it, you know, all these intermediate points make sense. Okay, other questions? Okay, so extraction from free text involves natural language processing. Now, natural language processing has syntax and the semantics aspects. In fact, there are entire courses on natural language processing, which differ from course, you know, language to language. For English, there is an NLP course, and there are lots and lots of NLP courses. I would not obviously be able to go through natural language processing at that level, but suffice it to say that you guys know from your grade schools that sentence, you can do part of speech tagging for sentences. You've been told, given a sentence, you need to be able to say what's the noun phrase, what's the verb phrase, you know, who is doing the action, to what is the action being done, all this stuff. Okay, so this is basically the syntax. And so if you can do part of speech tagging, syntactic parsing on the text, okay, that will be like a nice parse tree. Now, there is a grammar for English. It has too many exceptions, but there is a grammar. It's not context-free grammar, okay, because if it's context-free grammar, you know, you write C language, somebody is finding the syntactic structure of the C language. C is not self-describing, right? So the compiler essentially, as the first phrase, to make sure that you wrote syntactically correct C, it parses the C. A program using the context-free grammar, the grammar of the language. And similarly, for English, there are grammars, and you can use them to parse the current sentence, and you will get a parse tree. Okay, so the parse tree can then be used to write the templates. Okay, that's the basic idea. There are off-the-shelf software available to do syntactic parsing of English at any rate. You know, it may be the case for more and more languages they are available, but they are definitely available for English. Okay, they are not foolproof, but you know, having some of the partial parsing of the sentence is better than not having any. It just gives you some of the syntactic structure of the sentence. Okay, so now you will write extraction patterns in terms of this parse tree. Just as you wrote extraction patterns in terms of the HTML tree for structured text, here you write it in terms of the parse tree. Okay. So just look at the analogy between regex expression patterns on DOM trees versus sparse tree pattern on the language. Now here it's like I'm just going to jump over this and just say, yeah, you know that you can do these kinds of parts of speech tagging. You knew that you could do it, at least when you were in grade school, humanly, okay, by yourself, manually. But there are also ways of doing this automatically. And just as Potter's stammer, remember Potter's stammer? Potter's stammer, somebody had to write Potter's stammer once and that's it. You know, as long as you keep talking English and English doesn't change too much, not every one of you needs to write a stammer. You know, Potter's stammer is good enough. And similarly, you know, as long as English grammar doesn't keep changing, it does change a little bit, but if it doesn't change too much, then Brill has written a tagger, you know, you can use the Brill's part of speech tagger, for example. Okay. So now what can you do? What would be the kind of extraction patterns you will write? So for example, you can write, it turns out that language, even free text, has certain generic extraction patterns. Okay, so for example, I'll say here, cities such as Boston, Los Angeles, and Seattle. Okay, so it's like X such as Y, Z, and W. So then I can say Y and Z and W are instances of X. Okay, now is this a completely foolproof rule? Of course not. I'm sure if you just think for a few seconds, you can come up with a such as sentence where the things appearing in the after the such as are not actually the subclasses or instances of the previous one. But it does seem to appear lots and lots of times. So one idea is write extraction patterns for these kinds of things which more or less work. And then if you do extract a fact here, for example, using this you say Boston is a city, Los Angeles is a city, Seattle is a city. So now I have three facts. So I extract the facts, which is a generate stage, and then I evaluate whether or not those are actually facts. Okay, and in fact, it turns out there's an interesting ways of evaluating. Okay, one idea would be, to actually use the search engines themselves to evaluate whether Seattle is a city or not. Okay, but this should not be surprising to you because I told you at the very beginning of the course that you can ask Google whether water flows uphill or downhill and just answer that in terms of the number of hits. Okay, and similarly you can answer whether Boston is a city or not and what's the probability that Boston is a city by taking the number of hits for the word Boston. So whenever you do search, you get the number of hits for that word, okay? And that's the denominator, and the number of hits for the word Boston plus city. Okay, that'll tell you whether Boston is a city or not. I mean, if that's a high enough number, then Boston is a city. If it's a small number, it's not. Okay, that's the basic idea, okay? So this is a that's an automatic evaluation which uses the web itself. And there are other ways. You could actually sometimes have people do the evaluation of the extracted facts. But the important thing is, rather than try to extract correct facts by definition, I will try to extract facts that are likely to be facts, and then I will separate the validation stage, so generate and test. So, you know, the generate and test approaches are good to the extent you take as much of the test part and put it into the generate. So if you don't generate junk, then you don't have to test it. Okay, but to the extent it's likely to be a fact, you know, you're going to reduce the amount of testing you do. Okay, so that's the basic idea. So I want to be able to write that C such as NP1, NP2, and NP3. Okay, if you have a syntactic thing like this, then I can write is a each head of the noun phrase C. Okay, this I would say is very similar to the regular expression patterns that you saw with respect to HTML trees, except the components are in terms of noun phrases and verb phrases and so on. Okay, so that's the idea. And so basically the template, it's a template driven extraction where the template is in terms of syntax tree. Okay. Now the question of course is, who writes these templates? Currently the way things are going, people write these templates for a bunch of these things. Okay, because notice that this is a meta template. In fact, it is good for cities, it's good for silly people. So for example, I could have written a sentence such as, silly people such as, you know, Tom, Mary and John. And it will work that the same exact rule works, you know, now Tom becomes a silly people, Mary becomes a silly people, John becomes a silly people. Okay, so these are very powerful patterns, these are meta patterns which can give you lots of facts. Okay. And then having gotten the fact, as I said, you may want to having generated a whole bunch of these facts, you may want to check whether or not these are likely to be true. Okay. One idea that people have been using is actually, as I said, in terms of taking the search engine hits directly. It's something that you could not have done in the past, you know, when there was no easy way of looking at large scale number of human written text documents. Okay. Now, the fact that this works, you have to understand, it's only working because web files are, in the end, mostly generated by humans. Okay. If in fact 95% of the web pages were generated by random, I mean, so basically by randomly selecting words, okay, are basically randomly selecting syntactically correct sentences, such as colorless green ideas sleeping furiously. Okay, it's not hard to generate syntactically correct and semantically gobbledygook sentences. Okay, so if the web is made up of mostly pages of the type colorless green ideas sleeping furiously, then finding, you know, whether or not a pattern that you extracted is right or wrong to humans by checking whether it is true on the web hits makes no sense. It only makes sense because we believe that most of the pages actually are made by humans. Okay. Now, of course, so to that extent, then, and also, so in this case, so to see whether Seattle is a city or not, I can look for the number of hits for Seattle plus city divided by the number of hits for just Seattle. And to the extent that's a large number, then Seattle is a city. Okay. Now, having started from this idea, so here is an example actually. Yakima is a city. Okay. So, if you try to look at whether or not the probability that Yakima plus city divided by the number of hits for Yakima. So, Yakima city is 2760, number of hits for Yakima is 1.3 million. Okay. So, the probability that Yakima is a city is 0.02. Okay, so that should be considered high, essentially, to the extent, in fact, that number for Seattle will be much higher. Okay, Yakima is a city, but it probably has other uses too, possibly, yes. Say that again, I didn't understand.
I'm saying if you got some extraction pattern that contains frequent words like is, or the.
No, but we are not talking about is, right? We are talking about Yakima city.
Yes, but how can you make sure your pattern is not, say, somebody changes some word, then you suddenly pick those is words?
That's what I'm saying. So there, you could pick. So for example, Rav is happy. Okay. Now that doesn't mean that Rav is a subset of happy, or happy is a subset of Rav. Okay. Clearly I'm going to get wrong facts. Okay. But what is the chance that when you give Rav plus happy to the web, which will be like a zero number of pages, because there is no page on the web which says Rav is happy, divided by just Rav, which are 7 pages, okay, 0 by 7, 0. So Rav happy is not a fact that we are interested in. He may well be, but the web as a whole doesn't seem to believe it. Okay, Phoenix City, there seems to be more support. No, we are not, no, actually the pattern, let's see. So, you, in fact, you notice that you ignored such as. You use such as is the indicator that a pattern is occurring. Okay? And once the pattern is occurring, so see, if you ever see, see such as NP1, NP2, and NP3, then you convert it into is a, the head of noun phrase, see. So such as is an indicator, okay, it's not a concept in itself, okay? Yes?
So if a lot of applications rely on this kind of knowledge, which they get from the web to define what content is what, basically it would be possible to do the same as people do with link forms of a concept.
Yeah, I agree. No, in fact, I wanted to almost say this, which is, you know, if in fact, but right now, we are happy. So for 3 days, at least, we can use this. And then it will become adversarial. Okay. So in fact, most mail, I mean, one could have said the same thing. Most mail is going to be useful. Who would take the time to send me an email? You know, I mean, this is what I would have said like about, what, 12 years back, and maybe even 6 years back. But now I know that only losers send me mail. You know, I mean, because most of my mail is from, it has nothing to do with people interested in communicating with me. It's all spam. Okay, so there is adversarial nature. That's lay of the land. You can't have, you know, help it. It's a very good point. But at least right now, there is. I think part of the reason is if there is economic utility in getting Seattle stripped of its cityhood, then I believe people will write pages, you know, which will say Seattle is a monster, that are much more in number than Seattle is a city. Okay? It's fine. But until then, you know, we do have, so just as, because of, just because there are link forms, we don't give up on page rank. It's useful, it's just it can be defeated. But to defeat it, people have to work really hard because there are a large number of pages that need to put links. And same thing here too, you know, if it was 10 pages, it's hard. I mean, it's easy to defeat, but if you're talking about at a web level, it's harder to change. Yes? It depends. I mean, it's the same thing for the page rank too. I mean, it is going to be an issue if people, if in fact, I mean, it depends on, you know, if there are enough people who are interested in making this happen and they have no other work than to make lots and lots of pages which have this wrong information in them, then, you know, it is doable, even for popular concepts. But the assumption is that since it's going to be that hard, it's not going to happen most of the time. Okay? Yes? So the point he was stating is, what if people essentially either removed all the pages which have Seattle and city together, or wrote lot more pages which have Seattle and monster together rather than Seattle and city together, then you are likely to, you know, say Seattle is a monster is even more highly supported fact than Seattle is a city. Okay? You can't help it. But then they need to write, to the extent there are, let's say, 3 million pages which say Seattle plus city, to make Seattle a monster, you need to at least write 6 million pages which say Seattle and monster right next to each other. What? Yeah, you can do it. That's what I'm saying. But the point is, why would you do it unless there is some economic advantage to it? I mean, right? Right, I mean, you know, we could have, I mean, I guess the other Olympic contenders could have said Chicago is a monster, you know, last week, because Chicago was a contender, so was Los Angeles as the U.S. Olympics host city. Okay, so they could have done it, for example. But for small, otherwise, what's the, you know, motive? What's the, yes? That's again, yeah, you can do all this. Again, I think that's exactly the kind of thing. So you can actually use trustworthy pages. And furthermore, you can also use, just as you did an extraction followed by a validation, you can do extraction followed by a validation 1, followed by a validation 2, followed by a validation 3, followed by validation 4, which asks Tim Berners-Lee, do you think it's a fact? Or somebody, you know, some human, do you think it's a fact? Okay. You can think of these automated things as at least reducing the number of things that have to be manually validated. Okay. So there is a plus point, there's a minus point, but you have to be aware of both. And I'm happy actually that these two ideas came up, because people are putting things together over the course. There are, having said this, you know, people, of course, there are tons and tons of ways in which these kinds of facts can be validated but be wrong. Okay, like for example, Clinton is the president. Yeah, there are still a lot of pages which have Clinton and president. But if you are depending on the web pages to tell you the time, then the time has passed and Clinton is no longer the president. You know. So obviously, you're going to say Clinton is a president. You know, in some sense, there's limits to the kinds of knowledge that you can glean and validate this way. Okay. And then there are words which have multiple word senses. So Amazon, is it a shop or a river? Seattle, is it an Indian chief or a city? Okay. There are multiple words, and both are true actually. And so the issue is, now one of the problems is the dominant senses will mask the smaller one. So if you have Amazon currently, unfortunately, Amazon is not a river. Nobody knows that Amazon is a river. Amazon is the biggest, widest river, but nobody knows. You know, they all know this, you know, boxes that come in the mail. Okay. So how do you realize that Amazon is a river using this kind of an idea? Okay, so if somehow, so here's the interesting thing, you would have found a fact that Amazon is a river by extracting that pattern from a single page, because there are still pages on the web which say Amazon is a mighty river, and then that would be our mighty rivers of the world such as Amazon, and you know there your tagger, you know your pattern would have fired, and you would have come up with a candidate tag, Amazon is a river. Okay, but then now you have to try and check whether it is true. And it turns out that there's going to be much smaller number of, if you look at the number of pages where Amazon occurs and the fraction of those pages where Amazon occurs with river, that's too small a fraction, because most of the pages where Amazon occurs, it occurs with bookstore or shop. Okay. So really, to figure out whether Amazon is a river or not, what you need to do is you have to look for, the denominator must be Amazon minus shop. So you unmask it. So to move, are there any pages which talk about Amazon not being a shop? And among those pages, how many of them say Amazon is a river? So Amazon minus shop in the denominator, the hits for that, Amazon minus shop plus river in the numerator. That will then essentially will let you see that Amazon can actually be a river. Because of the pages that don't talk about the shop Amazon, you know, they seem to be talking about the river Amazon. So that's a pretty high percentage of them. So this is an unmasking. Again, a cute idea. You know, you can do that, you know, in this case. So that's, in this particular case, Chicago the city versus Chicago the movie. And Chicago is both a city and a movie. And you can unmask, I mean, you know, if you already know that Chicago is a movie, Chicago is a city as a validated fact, if you want to check whether Chicago can be a movie, then you do the denominator to be Chicago minus city, and the numerator to be Chicago minus city plus movie. Okay? Again, if I have 10 files, can I completely mess up with this kind of extraction? Yes. If I have 8 billion files, is it easy? Harder. Okay. Now, in fact, there is a large number of projects. This particular set of slides is from a project at University of Washington, but there are many other people who are doing this sort of approach for learning base facts directly from the web. Okay. And of course, there are, as I said, these are just some of the problems. You know, this one I can actually handle. I can handle that Amazon is actually a river as well as a shop by doing this unmasking. But there are some other ones. So for example, one particularly tricky issue in writing these kinds of template-driven extractions is learning multi-array predicates. Basically, if you think in terms of predicates, all the ones I have talked to you till now are unary predicates. You know, Seattle is a city, Amazon is a river. Okay, so that would be written, you know, is river Amazon, is city Seattle. Okay, but what if you want to write multi-array predicates? You know, predicates with multiple. If you are talking about relations between 15 guys, you know, relation between three entities or four entities. Much harder to write reasonable templates for those, and also much harder to actually get non-trivial ways of validating those facts. So you can catch some of them, but not all. So this is not the way you're going to actually be able to do complete natural language and processing. But if you can get some of the facts and validate them. Having said that, I should also mention that there is actually a group of people in natural language processing now which actually says you should use these kinds of techniques, extended versions of these kinds of techniques, to help machines do reading. Now forget about the normal way of doing natural language processing, which unfortunately I don't think you necessarily know, but if you take like an NLP class, they'll talk about, you know, how to do the syntax analysis, how to do the semantic analysis, etc., etc., etc. Nobody ever said semantics come from hits, you know, numerator of the hits of numerator divided by hits of denominator. But now actually NLP is, there's a vocal sub-community of NLP which says this is the right way to do NLP because you have this corpora, this really large corpora. And if when they really shift into that, then, you know, of course, all these other problems of the adversarial nature of the corpora do become important. Okay? Let me talk to you about an idea very similar to this, except with an interesting difference, but it's from much closer to home because it's right in the brickyard. There is a project that Chitta Baral and some of his colleagues are doing, where their idea is this idea called collaborative biocuration. CBioC is their project. And what they are trying to do, essentially, is biologists are going to be looking at tons and tons of papers. Okay, and a large number of papers are being published. And they are reading these papers in free text, in normal English text. Okay, now if you can extract patterns, useful patterns from the biological text papers and index these papers in terms of those facts, okay, so that for example, as somebody is reading a particular paper, then you know the interface realizes that this paper abstract talks about interactions between protein 1 and protein 2. And by the way, I have no clue what biology is, so I might be talking nonsense. So they might be talking about, you know, interaction between protein 1 and protein 2, and then to the extent this paper is tagged with this interaction, now you can also look at what are all the other papers which have information about either protein 1 or protein 2 or the interaction between them, okay, and then start making more useful recommendations saying you may be interested in these other papers, okay. So that's the idea. Now, to be able to take a paper and extract a pattern such as interact protein 1, protein 2, or interaction type protein 1, protein 2, okay, you need extraction patterns, just like Seattle is a city and something else is a country, so on. Except in this case, the patterns are extracting interaction knowledge. Okay, the pattern extractors look very similar to the pattern extractors you've seen earlier. You know. So if you know, take the head of the noun phrase and take the C and say is a this. Okay. So CYOC people are doing exactly that kind of an idea. Okay. So they are interested in doing information extraction on the abstracts to get out the various interactions. Okay. Now the question, of course, is interaction analysis. I mean, any of these kinds of extractions can be faulty. Just as Seattle is city, Rav is happy. They are different. They have very different meanings, right? In the other case, you had web. Okay. So if CYOC actually picks up a wrong interaction as an interaction, so it's actually the paper isn't saying that these two proteins interact, but because the pattern misfired, you assume that protein 1 and protein 2 are interacting. Okay? Who is going to validate it? Now here is a scenario where you cannot validate it by giving it to Google, right? Things that the common sense, bare common sense knowledge would be written on Google, I mean on any random number of pages. But stuff which, especially the kind of stuff that is appearing in the professional journals of that field, the very reason it's appearing is because it's new. Nobody ever said that this actually happened. And you said it, you proved it, so you get a paper. So if I misread your paper, I can't ask Google, do you think it's right? Do you understand what I'm saying? What I need to do essentially is to show a human being who can read natural language and look at this interaction and say, look, by the way, do you think this interaction is actually mentioned in this abstract? So here you want to validate extracted patterns still, but you want to do it at a manual level. You want to, you know, depend on the kindness of the humans. And CYOC's idea is similar to this. Again, this is this collaborative, you know, incentivizing people to give extra information. Okay, so their idea is to show these interactions that are relevant to the paper that you're currently looking at and allow you to vote, saying yes or no. Okay. And if they say, if enough people say yes, this is, they are not talking about whether or not the fact is right. All they are saying is whether that fact is mentioned in the abstract. This could be a paper that's been disproved. It was a disreputable journal and it's not actually true. But did the abstract say it according to an English speaker? Okay. And to the extent there's enough number of votes, their hope is that they can then take the validated facts which have higher confidences and say, those are validated. Okay. By the way, this view of validation of facts should also make you think of this idea that basically the knowledge that you get through extraction is deterministic or uncertain, because there is, you know, in fact all knowledge is uncertain, but you know, even if it is deterministic, right, the way you got it, you basically have uncertainty of extraction. So really, there is this other issue, which is if you extract all these kinds of base facts and they have different levels of certainty associated with them, if you just ignore all the uncertainties and say all of them are equally true, then you're missing a large piece of useful information. So you actually need the knowledge representation standard that can deal with uncertainty. Okay, so it's not just deterministic logic. Okay. So this is the idea that Chitta and his group are doing. If you're interested in it, go and talk to him. As I understand, the interesting part, of course, everybody has to do extraction, and they just, you know, take some link grammar, which is like a variation of Brill's dagger, to do their extraction pattern. Okay. By the way, one of the interesting things I should mention is, suppose here I said cities, this is like the simplest example, you know, but there are, once you have language, one of the interesting things is pronouns. Okay? Seattle is a great city. It rains there most of, you know, there it rains most of the time. Where is there? You and I understand it, but most of us actually write English where sometimes the editors will say, you know, dereference the pronoun, because it's not clear what is the pronoun that you're talking about, even for humans. And now you're talking about machines, so machine will say, you know, basically there is a city, or there it rains. You know, what it needs to really do is use the English syntax to realize that there here is a pronoun which refers to some other noun that's been mentioned earlier, and then dereference it. So you can have patterns which are much more interesting than this. You understand what I'm saying? Because of, you know, English is not HTML, and so there is more interesting syntax there. So that's, so I'm in talking about this, I'm sort of showing you the tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot more interesting patterns that can be written. Okay, but then that also means that the grammar analysis should help you do dereferencing of pronouns, and that cannot be done with certainty, even for well-formed English. Humans themselves are oftentimes confused as to what the there means, and then they will make a certain hypothesis, and the rest of the sentences will then make it clearer. If not, they'll just yell at you saying, tell me, what are you talking about? You know. But the point is, grammar analysis, the syntax analysis is much more than just HTML style. I mean, it can be more interesting because you're doing dereferencing of pronouns. This is called anaphora resolution. You know, that's something that you would be able to support through syntactic analysis. Okay, so that's the CBiosy story. So the difference between CBiosy and the other version is they both use information extraction on unstructured text, because abstracts are not structured, neither are normal web pages. Abstracts of papers are not structured, neither are normal web pages. They are using analysis of the unstructured text to derive certain templated facts. Okay, so for which they have to write templates, and then they have to extract. Okay, now the one issue, of course, is how do you validate the extracted facts? And to validate the extracted facts, CBiosy actually depends on humans, and whereas the other guy depends on the World Wide Web itself, because there's an entire corpora. And CBiosy depends on humans not because the other, because it doesn't know how to do the other one, but you cannot use, you know, I mean, common sense knowledge can be validated by hits, but unique knowledge cannot be validated by hits. Okay? And in fact, there is a whole bunch of things that one can talk about in the context of CBiosy, which is connected to the social network analysis. So where did this paper get published? So, you know, if you, first level of analysis is it even present in the abstract? Okay, is it actually present to some English, you know, speaking reader, this interaction, is it present in the abstract? The second level is it actually semantically true? Now, that might depend very well on where is this published? Who is publishing it? Remember this poor guy from South Korea who was publishing huge number of, today I cloned a sheep, you know, yesterday I cloned a donkey, day before yesterday I was cloning humans, and he was like extremely writing all these papers, which one of the interesting things I have to tell you is this guy's papers were getting published, you know why? Because large number of people want papers, and so they will lend names to people who do the work so that they can get more papers. So a huge number of scientists sitting in US and other countries without actually checking whether this guy even has a lab, because he's getting enough papers, they said, okay, we can be the last author, we can be the seventh author, and so on. And so, and the journals look at who has sent the paper. Oh, this guy, he got Nobel Prize last year. You know, must mean, this must be, you know, relevant, and so they'll publish it. Okay? So this guy had this going for a whole bunch of time, and then when he got caught, all these other people were saying, we didn't know he was cheating. And I was thinking, why did you give your name? I mean, if he's cheating, you're cheating way more, because you're putting your name on a paper about which you don't know anything other than the fact that it's in LaTeX, you know, which is much worse. But the point is that there is this whole issue of trust, reputation, and where did you read the fact, you know, all of which are basically social networks and link analysis. You can do all that in the context of CBiosy too. Okay, so that's a sort of an interesting thing where extraction plays an important part, but there are other things that play too. Yes.
But in that kind of thing, so in the previous scenario, if you're using something like C++, it's a disadvantage that you can't use Google and do this kind of validation. But in a sense, that would also be an advantage because it's a smaller, more restricted domain. So you should be able to come up with that kind of domain knowledge file, which might represent the entire.
No, but the point is, ultimately, the question is this interaction actually mentioned in the abstract? Because if it was something that could have been inferred, they wouldn't have gotten a paper. This was something that could not have been logically inferred. You know, I mean, you don't write a paper if you all, if all people already know, you know, sentence A implies B and sentence A, you don't get a paper for saying B, right? Because everybody knows B, you know. So that's the interesting part. Now, you know, up until now, you listen to me. So those of you who know Chitra Bharara should go and tell him that I really put a good plug for his work. Okay. But now let me tell you the other problem, and this part you don't tell him. So the trick that the trouble that they're having, it's a very interesting project. I was involved in it for a while, but the place where people get stuck ultimately is how do you incentivize humans to start using these kinds of tools? That's where they're getting stuck. They have millions of facts, but five of them have been validated by Tony Gitter, who is one of the undergraduate students, because he did it. You know, nobody else is doing it. So how do you get other people to do it? For that, you need the incentivization structures. Last class, you may have been thinking, you know, I'm in a CS course. Why is Rao talking about how to get people to do your work for free for you? You know, but that's what you're looking for. You need to come up with good mechanisms to make people think they are going to, you know, that they're going to benefit from this. And some delayed gratification is not good enough. Everybody who listens to about his project says, wow, that's a great project. I think we would love to use it. But what they're saying is, once it stabilizes and there's already knowledge, then we will use it. But are you going to help? It's like saying, if there are roads, yeah, we'll be happy to drive. But are you going to help build the roads? Yes. Writing papers so that they should write these things by tagging them, right? Is that what you say? Yeah, and in fact, scientists are geeks. They'll do anything. I mean, you know, if you ask them before you submit the journal paper, you must convert it into RDF, they'll do it. You know, right? It's not a bad idea, except it's going to start working from today onwards. That's the thing. Okay, I mean, of all the people, you know, scientists are going to follow rules, especially if you say, publication depends on this, you know. Wow, sure, okay. That's a good idea, you know. Okay. So the last one, and at least I'll mention part of it, and maybe, you know, depend, and then you should read this paper, Semtag and Seeker, which is what is this automated annotation thing. It's a very interesting paper. All the technical part of it is in the first 3.5 columns, and then the rest is large-scale study, you know, large-scale actual annotation of the pages on the web. It got the World Wide Web Conference Best Paper Award in 2003. So you know what sort of things are appreciated. So their idea is essentially doing annotations automatically. That's what I was telling you earlier in the beginning, which is, so suppose if you have a sentence like this on some page, what they would like to do is make a connection from Chicago to Chicago, the city, in their hierarchy of concepts. Okay. And then Michael Jordan will be connected to basketball player Michael Jordan. Now notice, of course, that they could have connected Chicago to Chicago the movie, and they could have also connected Michael Jordan to Michael Jordan the computer scientist. Okay, to the extent they are able to connect it correctly, automatically. So all they would do is, for example, they would, you know, this would be sort of changed to maybe this way, saying, tap.stanford.edu is the URL for the TAP ontology, the one that I was telling you about, which has, what, 700,000 concepts? Okay, so each concept, each node in this hierarchy has its own web page. Okay, and so all you need to do is you need to give the URL for that. Okay, so all the Chicago Bulls, it turns out that the TAP actually has a node for basketball team Bulls. okay, which, because it's a part of a hierarchy, you now know what is on top of it, what's on top of it, what's on top of it. It's not just a word anymore. It's a word in a, it's a concept in a hierarchy. So you know a lot more. For example, that since it's a basketball team, Bulls, it must be a sports team. And since it's a sports team, maybe there's an owner, all these fun things are free now because you made this connection. Okay? So this is what they want to do. And so in essence, what they're doing is, now this, they may not actually be able to write this directly on your page. What they want to do is, what they'll try to do is they'll set up what's called a label bureau, okay, which is yet another site, which, remember, for each URL, just as, you know, Google has cache of everybody's page, right? So even if you remove your page, they have a cache of your page. And similarly, you can have label bureaus for each page on the web. They basically say, for, you know, for some of the words on that page, what do they correspond to in the TAP ontology. So if somebody wants to know more about this page, then they make a call to this label bureau and then get the links which connect this page concepts to the TAP ontology and then go from there. That's what they want to do, essentially. And in essence, the functional aspect of it is a page like this is now, pieces in this page are now being connected to concepts in a hierarchy. Okay, it's a easy hierarchy of, you know, logical sentences. Okay, so that's what we want to do. Now, if humans have to do it, it's painful. But if programs do it, who cares? You know, to the extent they are only, if they're reasonably correct in doing this annotation, it could be a very useful thing. Okay, so that's what TAP, that's what SemTag and Seeker tries to do. And I, let's see. So they reduce the burden of text annotation. That's their deal. Okay. There is a link to the page in the readings list. You must read that, and we'll talk for the first 10 minutes of the next class as to whether you have specific questions on this. Essentially, what they do is they have this TAP ontology which has 70 and 200 concepts, and they have, for each node in the ontology, they have specific instances of that node appearing in various pages. Those are the training examples. Okay. So for example, under the basketball team Bulls, they might have, you know, label Bulls. If you ever see Chicago Bulls, then it is basketball team Bulls. Okay? And then Chicago Bulls, and then they will also consider the number of words that are appearing on the left and right of it, a number of words that are appearing on the left and right of it, and take that as the context. And somebody already said, this piece does correspond to this particular node in the ontology. So that's a training example, positive training example. Now later on, if you see a sent, you know, a page where it says Chicago Bulls, then you want to check whether these Chicago Bulls correspond to that particular node Chicago Bulls. What you do is you take the words around these Chicago Bulls, do a cosine similarity. Okay, this is coming back to cosine similarity. Do a cosine similarity between this piece of text and the piece of text that is stored along with that Chicago Bulls. And if it's high, then you say it is a, an example. They do this kind of an idea to actually do what? They crawled 264 million web pages, extracted 434 million semantic tags, and made the connections in the label bureau. You know, if without the million, it's not a web paper. If you did 264 pages and did 434 concepts, you know, it's a good homework problem, but www is not interested. Okay. What I would suggest is you go read this paper for next class beginning. We'll have some discussion on this. And then the next major topic we'll talk about is information integration. Stop here.